Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 16th day of February, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Gall, and let's start off today with a series of under-the-radar stories that primarily get local press and may or may not paint parts of a bigger picture. For example, this one from Alabama, where a Black Hawk military helicopter on a routine training mission suddenly and mysteriously plunged from the sky, impacting near a highway a few miles northwest of Huntsville, killing both on board. We had no survivors, said investigator Brent Patterson. We have a crime scene here. We have it taped off. In the age of cell phones, the crash was recorded on video. It certainly appears to be spinning almost vertically out of control. And the National Guard Bureau has confirmed the helicopter belonged to the Tennessee National Guard. Condolences are being expressed to the family of those killed in the accident. And at this point, there's just one thing we pretty much know for sure. Investigators will eventually tell you what the cause of the crash was, unless it turns out to have been mandatory vaccinations. Here's a throwaway story from the Epoch Times about a Yale professor who's also on board with global genocide. He recently proposed euthanasia as a solution to aging populations. Yasuke Narita, assistant professor of economics, that's what they call it at Yale anyway, said, "I feel like the only solution is pretty clear. In the end, isn't it mass suicide and mass seppuku of the elderly?" He also stated that there was a possibility of making it mandatory in the future. And remember, folks, they've been trying to convince you the Zyklon B injection was a vaccine. Here's another one of those, you knew it was coming, it's pretty obvious, and they're coming out and admitting it stories. Another throwaway. The managing director of the International Monetary Fund, Big Brother's global bankster, Kristalina Georgieva, has warned that the world needs to prepare for billions to die. In this case, it's following the imminent outbreak of World War III. Well, no, I don't think she's got that right. World War III has broken out. It would be the imminent escalation to what they've been jonesing for, and that would be nukes. Oh, and for bonus points, can you guess where she said it? Yeah, this one's easy. At the World Government Summit panel hosted by CNBC's Hadley Gamble in Dubai on February 14th. I'm going to call this next story a related one. Europe has spent hundreds of billions of euros in energy subsidies to individuals and businesses in order to shield the citizenry from the EU-caused energy crisis. Oh, and let's not forget the Biden-Fuhrer bombing of the Nord Stream pipelines. In order to pay for the sky-high energy bills resulting from insane EU and NATO and US policies, which left the continent dependent on unreliable and insufficient so-called green energy sources, followed, of course, by the destruction of anything that they declared to be not green, European countries have forked out over 700 billion pounds, or almost 800 billion euros, to shield businesses and households from soaring gas prices since the start of the green-inspired energy crisis, according to the latest research from Bruegel. As oilprice.com reported earlier in the week, the think tank has calculated that since September 2021, the EU has either earmarked or spent $681 billion in energy crisis spending, while the UK has allotted $103 billion, Norway just over $8, and guess who was the biggest spender? Germany, by far, splashing out the equivalent of almost $300 billion fiat bucks in September of 21. And this because, the story says, even before Russia invaded Ukraine, EU countries, and especially Germany, grew reliant on Moscow's fossil fuel energy because they didn't want to tap their own resources out of fear of appearing hypocritical while they built ineffective windmills and solar farms. And there's an irony in this next observation from J.D. Hayes of Natural News, too. The exorbitant spending has certainly taken a toll out of government budgets and may even be affecting other line items related to the so-called Green Revolution. For example, in Germany, sales of EVs tanked after the government ended most subsidies for them, perhaps because of the added expenditure of subsidizing electric bills, and hey, they didn't have the power in the grid to run the stupid things anyway. How much of a subsidy would it take to convince a German to buy an EV that he's not going to be able to charge? Oh yeah, and speaking of blowing up pipelines so that the European Union can be plunged into cold and darkness, the bombshell from Seymour Hersh, revealing just exactly who, as if we didn't already know, blew up the Nord Stream pipelines, is being virtually ignored by the waste stream ministries of propaganda in the United States. But at least RT is paying attention. Journalist Seymour Hersh says the story headlining More Bombshells to Come has promised to reveal more incriminating information linking the U.S. to the demolition of the Nord Stream pipelines after the Biden-Fuhrer ordered them destroyed to prevent Germany from resuming the purchase of cheap Russian gas, he claimed. In a post to his Substack on Wednesday, the Pulitzer Prize-winning former journalist for the New York Times slammed the waste stream media, singling out his old employer and the WAPO for refusing to run, quote, a word word on his pipeline story and for ignoring Russia and China's calls for an international investigation. Both papers, he said, published his exposés on the U.S. military war crimes in Vietnam, but they're now seemingly uninterested in, quote, national security or matters of war and peace. The White House, confirming that the story is absolutely true, declared them to be, quote, utterly false and complete fiction. Just remember, Biden is intellectually sharp as a whip and is the most popular U.S. president ever elected. And, says RT, the article has backed up what Moscow seems to think would be obvious, their repeated assertions that the U.S. carried out the strike in order to prevent rapprochement between Russia and Germany while making Berlin more dependent on more expensive American liquefied natural gas, or LNG. On Wednesday, Hirsch wrote, there may be more to learn about Joe Biden's decision to prevent the German government from having second thoughts about the lack of cheap gas this winter. Stay tuned, he said. We're only on first base. For today's pedophilia update, or is it pedicide, we turn to a piece from Lance D. Johnson at Natural News about a case manager at a transgender center in St. Louis Children's Hospital. And I do have to say sick after that, don't I, for several reasons. The former counselor and case manager at Washington University Transgender Center at St. Louis Children's Hospital is now speaking out. Jamie Reed, age 42, who for almost 4 years worked at the Washington University School of Medicine Division of Infectious Diseases, giving counsel to HIV-positive young adults who identified as transgender or gender nonconforming, says now that, quote, what's happening to children is morally and medically appalling. She relayed her own compassion to the youth she counseled, having questioned her own gender identity several times throughout her adolescence. However, when she took up the job as a case manager at the new transgender center, she began seeing the operation for what she says it really was, an abusive, predatory operation that confused youth, destroyed their identity, while chemically castrating and physically mutilating their bodies. And I guess that's a pretty decent summary. Writes Johnson, the sole purpose of the so-called transgender clinic was to treat kids with gender dysphoria as soon as possible, and as permanently as possible, too. Your host can't help but think. The treatments were not centered on helping the child realize and accept their true God-given birth gender. No, they were instead designed to chemically alter their birth gender and cause further confusion about who they really are. No confusion, though, when it comes to what was eventually going to happen to them concerning reproduction, and that was nothing. Jamie Reed brought into the clinic around 1,000 distressed young people who were immediately handed hormone prescriptions which caused further distress, never addressing the underlying psychological and emotional issues that the teens faced. Jamie saw with her own eyes, she says, the side effects and life-altering consequences of these prescriptions, and in many cases, the youth were permanently sterilized. Quote, I left the clinic in November of last year because I could no longer participate in what was happening there, she writes. By the time I departed, I was certain that the way the American medical system was treating these patients is the opposite of the promise we make to do no harm. Instead, we're permanently harming the vulnerable patients under our care. When she started at the center, she got about 10 calls per month on average, but by the time she left, the number of damaged kids seeking puberty blockers and synthetic hormones had exploded to between 50 and 70 cases per month, and many had their underlying health conditions completely ignored, from depression and anxiety to ADHD, eating disorders, obesity, and autism. And when she questioned the use of hormones and surgery for any child, she was quickly derided by her peers as being a transphobe. Jamie saw an influx of young patients who were deeply disturbed, who'd suffered through one or more childhood traumas, and instead of addressing the actual issues these children were facing, the therapist often gave them the green light for gender transitions as the solution to all of their problems. Quote, left untreated, gender dysphoria has any number of consequences, from self-harm to suicide, says the center on their website. This message alone proves that these transgender centers, says Lance Johnson, are violently coercive. They condemn patients to psychological demise and certain death if they don't go through with puberty blockers, synthetic hormones, and surgeries. All of which, says the author, is a hopeless message. This is medical malpractice. This is a blatant and coercive lie. Amen. Here next is a story that I'll admit I take with a grain of salt because of the source, which is MSN.com. But nevertheless, it raises some interesting questions. In October of 2022, it begins, a number of cattle were discovered dead near the town of Meeker in the mountains of Colorado. Officials from CPW, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, said in November, after 41 cows were found dead, that they couldn't confirm the cause. Some of the cattle, but not all of them, appeared to have injuries linked to wolves, said the officials. However, they didn't find any wolves. There were none detected in surrounding areas. Some cattle didn't have any injuries at all, at least not anything visible. So they said maybe they were caused not by wolves, but by, quote, large canines. Anybody else see something there that just doesn't quite make sense, folks? Carter Niemeyer, wolf predation expert and former U.S. Department of Agriculture Wildlife Services District Supervisor, was supplied with the documents on the incident by the Humane Society of the U.S., and he said he saw no evidence of wolf-caused injuries. From the documents, I guess they were left unscathed by the wolf attacks. But notice, folks, the article never says the expert examined any of the dead animals. But maybe it was something else, because they were all at high altitude. Occasionally, that could cause heart failure.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Still, though, all of them appear to have died quite suddenly, and all at once. But even that hasn't been confirmed. Now, here's the thing I think is interesting, folks. This mysterious incident came to life as gray wolves are slowly beginning to make a comeback in Colorado. The animals used to be abundant in the state before they were eradicated in the 1940s because they killed things like cattle and kids, and a lot of people decided, huh, the old stories about wolves were true. We don't want them here anymore. But now it seems the idiot leftists in Denver that think they run this state are trying to reintroduce wolves, whether the people who actually live in the areas that they want to destroy want it or not. The old predation menace. Proposition 114 was allegedly approved by voters in the rigged 2020 general election, and you have to figure, folks, that if it really did win, it was by people in Denver and Boulder who don't know anything about the mountains anyway and don't really care what happens to people out there in flyover, well, hikeover country. Who knows? Maybe once a couple of Boulder hikers get et, that might change their minds. The decision, says the piece, though, is still controversial among the general public in Colorado because there are folks that don't like the idea of reintroducing killer wolf packs to roam wild and kill cattle and kids. This next story is from the NC Renegade, and it's additional information that doesn't get much coverage. Aren't we getting used to that by now? From the Waystream Media. And, of course, concerning specifically the East Palestine, Ohio train wreck. Says the headline, it's the dioxin. No, it's not just what was in the tanker cars. It's what happens when they burn and combine. This may be the largest dioxin plume in world history. And says the author, I know of no more serious release ever. And yeah, it begins, that is the word missing from most coverage of the massive train wreck, whether it was accidental or incompetent or something else, in Palestine, Ohio. The word missing is dioxin. There were reported to be 14 tanker cars full of vinyl chloride, a precursor to polyvinyl chloride, that is, vinyl. Burning vinyl, though, is the most serious source of dioxin in the environment, whether it's from trash incinerators, house fires, or chemical spills. Because vinyl chloride is a precursor chemical to making PVC, anytime chlorinated compounds burn, there will be the release of dioxins. And dioxin, it turns out, is a byproduct of any manufacturing process involving chlorine, from disinfectants to the bleaching of paper, and there was plenty of dioxin in those tanker cars before they caught fire. But the real mess is the following. 14 tanker cars, and there were really many more than that, but 14 of them had vinyl chloride, was then set on fire deliberately by the idiots in Big Brother government, state and federal, apparently to make it easier to clear the railroad tracks, or at least that's what they're telling people, as they're dying or preparing to die. This was, says the author, the worst possible decision, because it turned many, many miles of territory into what now should be no man's land. But I've not heard of a single test for dioxin being done, says the author. There's an old saying among lawyers, folks, that goes something like, don't ask the question if you don't want people to hear the answer. Still, it affects a very large region of the country. It's not a local issue at all. The massive plume will spread far and wide and is being blown by the prevailing winds across Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York State towards the population centers of the northeastern U.S. Oh, again, folks, it'll make a great excuse, though, to divert people from the fact that it might be their weakened immune systems and weakened cardiovascular systems and heart and lung function that kill them as a result of taking the poison poke, the Zyklon B injection. And a weakened immune system, of course, can also cause cancers that might have even been in remission to come back more virulently. At least at a minimum, the waters are being muddied now, aren't they? Which ironically tends to protect all of the guilty parties, regardless of who really actually was the main culprit. And whether it's via land or water, the toxins can spread in many directions, via water, soil movement, and air movement, since the prevailing winds are only an average, and the contamination is so serious that even soil tracking will spread significant amounts of the poisons. While few people remember how the town of Times Beach, Missouri was evacuated and then purchased by the federal government, hey, I grew up in Missouri, folks, I remember that one, after which it was leveled and had its zip code removed, and that from far, far less dioxin contamination than what has now happened in Ohio. It's now a state park, though, the author notes, but I'm not sure who'd want to have a picnic there. There's another problem, too. Dioxins are hormonally toxic, and two, they're also extremely persistent, and they build up in the food chain, generally in lipids. Huh, where have we heard that word recently? Oh, yeah. Lipid nanoparticles. But all of the BS projected onto viruses is absolutely true when it comes to dioxins, though the contagion factor is different. Running through families, for instance, passed through mother's milk, affecting whole communities through toxic release and so on. Dioxins, though, are connected to every other toxin issue that's ever lived, from DDT to PCBs to Roundup. They're orders of magnitude above, though, and their effects. The author provided some links on that score. Still, most PCBs are close enough to dioxins to qualify as such, and PCBs degrade into something called dibenzofurans, also just called furans, which are dioxins with one molecule of oxygen instead of a pair of them. Dioxins are never made intentionally, though similar toxins are, but dioxin per se is a byproduct of other chemical processes or a degradation product. The bottom line, there is a lot more to what's going on here than gullible, dumbed-down Americans are being told. And at least that ought to sound real consistent by now. This is going to lead, says the author, to an early death for millions of Americans. For those exposed directly to Ohio and east, to the contamination of water that people will drink all the way to the Mississippi River, to contamination of food grown in the areas deemed to be safe by criminally incompetent and genocidal government bureaucrats. If you live downwind, says the story, you need to get the hell out of there. Move, whatever it takes. If you live anywhere else that's not affected, grow as much of your own food as you can so that you're not consuming dioxin-laden poison disguised as food. And as if that wasn't bad enough, folks, remember, they're going to stick various types of mRNA, not vaccines, in the food now, too. So be very aware of what you're eating, because Big Brother wants you to eat bugs and poison, and not much else. I realize now that this is such an important story. In case you missed it, let's go back to that train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, about a week and a half ago now, where 20 of the derailed cars carried hazardous materials that caused a massive fire and released unbelievable amounts of toxic chemicals. This may be, says one bit of coverage, the largest environmental disaster in U.S. history, although that's not precisely the way it's being covered. One of the stories aggregated in Zero Hedge's coverage says that while the U.S. government, sick, is dispensing millions of dollars in resources to treat balloons as an existential crisis, a small town in Ohio, on the Pennsylvania border, finds itself engulfed in what actually looks like a real apocalypse. Perhaps by design, all of the drama surrounding violations of U.S. airspace by Chinese spy initiatives seems to have done well to keep what is becoming one of the worst environmental disasters in recent memory, at minimum, from getting any real headlines. The chaos began last week when a train of more than 100 cars derailed in East Palestine near the state's border, a town of 5,000 residents. The accident launched 50 of those 100 freight cars from the tracks, 20 of which were carrying hazardous materials, 10 of which were detailed. And while the accident had no fatalities immediately, 5 of those cars contained pressurized vinyl chloride, a highly flammable carcinogenic gas. But it gets worse. In order to address the volatile scenario around the crash site, Ohio Emergency Management Agency executed its plan of venting the toxic gas with what was called a controlled burn. If you've seen the pictures, controlled looks like a little bit of an overstatement. But this was in order to avoid an uncontrolled explosion, which presented a risk of even more catastrophic damage. Or so people were told. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine said that drastic temperature changes made them decide to go ahead with what might avoid an explosion with the potential of deadly shrapnel traveling up to a mile. However, that operation sent large plumes of toxic smoke containing the vinyl chloride along with, are you ready for this, phosgene, hydrogen chloride, and other gases into the air as flames from the control burn raged on literally for days. And you may recall the name phosgene, folks, from World War I history. This was a poison gas used as a chemical weapon in the First World War, later outlawed by convention. A later update from Zero Hedge summarized the situation by saying, "Get the hell out of there," as Ohio's apocalyptic chemical disaster rages on. Following the control burn, the story continues, local authorities received multiple concerning reports from residents outside of the mile-long radius of the evacuation area. One local farmer reported the sudden deaths of many animals on the premises of his farm and put it this way, the chemicals we're being told are safe in the air. Well, that's definitely not safe for the animals or the people. For example, the owner of a local dog kennel in nearby Darlington, Pennsylvania, decided to leave her home despite the fact it was more than 10 miles away from the site of the controlled burn. And after fleeing to Boardman, Ohio, 15 miles from the derailment, the woman stated that she received multiple reports of dead chickens, fish, and other animals from friends and acquaintances. One affected resident told her their 2-year-old dog was let out to go to the bathroom but never returned. They later found it dead in the yard. There are, of course, warnings that the poor air quality might present long-term health risks to the public, including the carcinogenic effects of the chemicals. Carcinogens like vinyl chloride can cause cancer in organs, including the liver, according to Kevin Chris, professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering, who also serves as director of Ohio University's Air Quality Center. And the story summarizes it this way. While the immediate risk presented by a possible explosion following the derailment of the train may have been averted, the emergency response may in fact become an instance of the cure being worse than the disease it sought to remedy. Newsweek, says the coverage, noted a startling trend of more than a dozen reported train wrecks across the United States since this year started. Quote, the Palestine wreck is the tip of an iceberg and a red flag, said Ron Kamenkow, an Amtrak locomotive engineer and former Norfolk Southern freight engineer, to The Guardian. So yeah, you can recognize the slant here, upcoming. He's also the secretary for the Railroad Workers United, a nonprofit labor group that coordinates with the nation's rail unions. Said Kamenkow, the series of derailments is a wake-up call about the nation's rail workforce having dwindled as railroads focus on profits rather than safety. Or maybe, folks, it's even something worse than the progressive agenda might want you to know. I mean, gee, what do you think's happened to the quality of the entire national workforce since the pandemic? He warned, if something isn't done, it's going to get a lot worse, and the next derailment could be cataclysmic. Leah Holman's coverage focused on several aspects of the story, including the fact that people are starting to ask why there's been a near-total media blackout on this story. He quoted a tweet from Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wrote, East Palestine, Ohio is undergoing an ecological disaster because authorities blew up the train derailment cars carrying hazardous chemicals, and press are being arrested for trying to tell the story. Oh, but UFOs! What, she asks, is really going on? Says Holman, the vinyl chloride spilled into the groundwater and several creeks, including Sulphur Run, Leslie Run, Bull Creek, and Little Beaver Creek, which drains into the Ohio River. Local ABC News affiliate WYTV 33 interviewed hazardous chemicals expert Sil Caggiano, who told them, quote, we basically nuked a town with chemicals so we could get a railroad open. He advised residents to get physical and document their health conditions so that if they later contract cancer or some other autoimmune disease that might be caused by exposure to toxic chemicals, they could have a potential legal claim against the railroad and state authorities. Now, ironically, folks, this is interesting given that a lot of those people may have taken the poison poke and have autoimmune problems for, let's just say, other reasons. But at least this lets the railroads be a scapegoat rather than Big Pharma, and guess which one Big Brother would prefer you focus on? Call it heads they win, tails you lose. And Leah Holman adds one other observation. Chemicals, once they get into the groundwater, tend to move fast, which is why this is a much bigger catastrophe than just East Palestine or even neighboring communities. And by the way, one estimate shows that about 25 million Americans live in a rail disaster blast zone. And you got to ask this question, too, notes Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge. Why did it take the alleged Secretary of Transportation, Mr. Chestfeeder, whose only real qualification seems to be what he does in the bedroom, why did it take him, Pete Buttigieg, 10 full days to finally comment on the disaster in East Palestine? Maybe it's because he didn't know what phosgene was or how trains work. The ongoing crisis, concludes Zero Hedge's coverage, represents an environmental and humanitarian disaster that hasn't been seen in the United States in recent memory. The scenes from East Palestine look as if they're taken straight out of a horror film depicting nuclear winter. But in spite of that, the magnitude of this story has been seemingly scrubbed from public view, and the national media outlets, as they instead continue to run sensationalist headlines about issues that might not seem quite as severe by comparison, like balloons that may not even be balloons, but might be a precursor to the alien invasion that somebody seems to want Americans to fall for. And let's not forget, all of this helps to cover up the shortcomings of state and federal agencies tasked with emergency response management, whose continued lack of accountability, says the piece, enables them to fail the American public time and time and time again. Almost like it's part of the plan, don't you know? Yes, derailments can happen as a result of accident or incompetence. But isn't it amazing just what mind-numbing levels of incompetence we've seen, especially at the state and national levels of late? Almost like somebody is beyond incompetent. And all the while, somebody's destroying food sources, too. A word to the wise, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.